Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is help at home with minor home maintenance. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Hey, and welcome back to Project Independence in You. And that first hour went, half hour went really fast. And now we're here with Teresa Phan. And Teresa is a dentist with Northwell Health Physician Partners at Manhasset Department of Dental Medicine. And thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy day and patience to come here and speak to our radio listeners about this important oral health conditions and taking care of your teeth.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to sharing some useful and hopefully interesting information with our listeners today.
Well, that's great. So very interestingly enough, is the connection to coming to your dentist and the issue of having sleep apnea. So if you can maybe give us a little background. I know Otto's also very interested and has some questions about sleep apnea. So how does somebody come about going to their dentist, and why for a condition such as sleep apnea?
Well, dentists are actually in a unique position because we see our patients pretty regularly over the year, sometimes twice a year, sometimes even more if you need dental work. And the dentist who is properly trained in dental sleep medicine can actually see signs of a potential for having obstructive sleep apnea just by looking in a patient's mouth.
Okay.
You know, I was very surprised in reading about sleep apnea before this started. Something that does impact seniors as they get older is urination in the evening. And one of the things that you talked about on the checklist, more or less, is that sometimes nighttime urination can actually be caused by sleep apnea, which I never would ever think about putting that together. Maybe you could just expand on that a little bit.
It's a pretty complicated process of what goes on actually when a patient suffers from sleep apnea. But the gist of it is, when the patient can't breathe during the night, it sends a signal to the brain, and the various reactions from the heart result in a release of hormones that actually stimulate urination.
Really?
Hmm. Yes.
There you go.
As I said, it's a problem, particularly, I guess, among men when they get older.
What exactly is obstructive sleep apnea?
In general, it's a condition where a person's airway is too narrow and too collapsible. So when you're sleeping, a person who has sleep apnea has a predisposition to have closing of their airway, and that can be related to their anatomy, to the fat deposits in their throat and their tongue. And so as this occurs, the body goes into a panic mode and it wakes itself up just enough to get a person breathing again. But the problem is that it happens repetitively and repeatedly over the night, which can affect their sleep and their health.
This may be a little off the track here, but like I have a Fitbit. Mm-hmm. All right. And theoretically, the Fitbit is telling me how I'm sleeping at night. You know, you get your report the next day on the smartwatch or wherever, and it tells you you were awake and you were in REM or deep or, light. Does that help diagnose sleep apnea at all?
I think it's not quite so accurate, but it can give you an idea.
What would lead, what led, like, the awake part, if it's higher, would that, what tells you?
I can't attest to the accuracy of the Fitbit and those smartwatches, but the multiple awakenings, they do disrupt the sleep. And if you see something like that on your Fitbit, it may make you a little bit more suspicious of what's going on. Hmm. You can ask yourself, do I feel sleepy during the day, even though I slept 8 hours? Am I having trouble concentrating or difficult? Am I having difficulty remembering things? Am I waking up refreshed or do I still feel groggy when I wake up in the morning?
Well, let's say you as the dentist say you look like you're a candidate. You might have sleep apnea. What happens now? What do we do next?
Well, the next thing would be to have you do a sleep study. So typically when I suspect a patient might have sleep apnea, I will refer them to their physicians or to a sleep physician who's trained in particular treating sleep apnea, and they will send you for a sleep study. Now, the sleep study is much more accurate than the Fitbit.
Right.
There are a lot of electrodes where they monitor your brain waves and your muscle activity and your respiratory effort. And from that, they can actually diagnose whether you have the sleep condition.
I've heard, like, people who've gone through that, and people have a mental block about doing that, probably me included, to be honest about it, because now you have these wires and whatnot, and I just have to, I'm a pretty good sleeper, and I just mm-hmm. wonder if I would be able to sleep pretty good if I were all wired up.
That is a pretty common thought. There is something called the first night effect, where people who are not used to sleeping in a sleep lab, they may not sleep as well. There are home studies that they do where you can take a device home, and there's not as many wires and electrodes that can also evaluate your sleep, and the doctor can use that to make a diagnosis.
Now, once the diagnosis comes with the sleep apnea, I know that there is a breathing mask people might have to wear, and I know it's kind of coming along a little bit more advanced now, but the machine used to be very loud, and do they have better kind of technology now for people who have sleep apnea?
They do. They have a lot of different options. The gold standard treatment is the CPAP machine, which is the mask as you described.
Right.
That essentially works by blowing air into the airway, and that helps to keep the airway from collapsing. If you think of it like a balloon, if your throat is the collapsible balloon, when you blow up a balloon, the balloon fills up and it stays open. So that's essentially how the CPAP machine works. And then you have different surgeries that can be done. And where I come into play is we fabricate mouth guards that are specifically designed to treat the condition.
Oh, so if that would be like kind of maybe the least evasive way?
I find my patients find it comfortable.
Right,
yeah.
Too. Oh, okay, that's very interesting. So the mouth guard, is it like it keeps the mouth open or it keeps the mouth like grinding or from grinding?
It keeps the mouth from falling back. So when you're sleeping, the jaw muscles relax and your tongue relaxes, and that falls back on your airway. So it helps to, it narrows the airway.
Okay.
The mouth guard is meant to hold the jaw slightly forward, and it keeps the tongue forward and therefore the airway open.
Okay. That's interesting.
What about like the nose is part of this whole deal here?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, the nose seems like to get clogged up at night sometimes.
Yeah.
Does that contribute to sleep apnea?
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Is there a way that this mask or whatever device we may end up using, a mouth guard, would that help that part of it? Or is there another area that, you know, you might have to do something
right.
about?
Right, that's very true. That's a good point. The nose is essential in breathing. The nose is actually more of the structured part of your airway. As you move down to the throat, that's the area that's more collapsible. And then as you move further down, you get to your windpipe, which is supported by the cartilage in the trachea. But the nose, there are sleep devices, mouthpieces that help to aid the nose, position the nose so you can breathe better. There are some nasal devices that I use with my patients, or some patients might have to have nasal surgery just to help with the breathing.
It sounds like you are a kind of a specialist in sleep apnea, if you will. Is that your primary?
That's my primary area of concentration. It's not quite a specialty yet. It's not recognized as a specialty. And in fact, it's not really taught in dental school. So a lot of the training I've had to do has been outside of school with the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, which is a nonprofit organization that's helping to train dentists in this field.
Well, this could be the first, what did they say, when you know, opportunity for somebody to be diagnosed, and especially if someone lives alone,
Yes. They
may not even recognize what's happening when they sleep, because, you know, it could, some of it could be snoring, and if they're alone,
mm-hmm.
So coming to their dentist and kind of you figuring out, so it really should be a part of, like, the regular checkup, you know?
It should be, yeah. I agree, because there are a lot of health consequences related to sleep apnea.
Yeah, I was looking at the list.
Yeah, I mean, me too. And I've given it thought. I have a good friend of mine who has done something about it, but I remember back when we used to go with a family on a big vacation in a house, and this particular lady snored so loud that everybody in the house, and there were like 20 people, could not sleep.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, she could really blast it out. And she's since then done things about it, and I never mm-hmm. really paid attention to what she's done until we're doing what we're doing right now.
Oh.
So I think if nothing else, we are bringing more attention just by this chat
right. About
sleep apnea. You know, I don't think a lot of people pay attention to it.
So we have about 45 seconds till we take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what Otto was. But also, it's shocking to actually see all the conditions that are associated with sleep apnea. All the, you know, from stroke to all these things. So you really need, this is serious. You really need to pay attention. So we will be back with Dr. Fan when we return to Project Independence in You right here at WCWP.org.